back on Downtown. That's how Carrie wanted to serenade Eric Meehan of Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, leading into this week's edition of Message in the Bottle. Hello, Eric.
Hello. That's a beautiful thing. I love it. One of my favorite tunes, of course. Even, I mean, I bought the album back when it came out.
Wow.
So, yeah, thank you, Carrie. Special, dear to my heart, as are you. As I was mentioning offline, man, it's sad that this is the last time I'll be getting a phone call from Carrie to get me online, you know. Carrie, please, you know, from all of us at BWC, good luck. It's been a pleasure knowing you and working with you.
Well, thank you, Eric.
Yeah, you're a consummate professional, man. I mean, you know, when you hear about those people that get the phone calls in the middle of the night because the whatever is down, and like, okay, that's you. you're the unsung hero of KIT. So yeah, I'm in a great mood these days. In fact, all of my people. I don't think there's a single person in Central or Northern Jersey that's in a good mood if they have any inclination towards the football life.
I don't. What's really worse? What, from your perspective, stinking up the joint as the Giants did Sunday night, or losing your prize off-season acquisition in the first series?
Well, I believe I think Rutgers is actually probably the football team in the area that's probably doing the best and got the best prospects right now. So that should tell you pretty much how everybody's feeling.
Well, yeah, because they've got a couple former Black Bears on the staff. They've finally straightened things out.
That's right. Get some people on there. I mean, I love Greg Schiano, but let's be honest. He has, unfortunately, had his share of needing minders, so it's good. very good. Well, listen, everybody, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to go out and attempt to coach soccer for real, which should be fun, not only because it's absolutely soaking wet, but because I have no idea what I'm doing. So if there's any parents of my soccer team, go Timbers. I apologize in advance. I'm going to do my best. That's what I'm doing next. Speaking of the world of sports, but let's talk about the world of wine. As Rich mentioned, it's Tempranillo Day. So this is what the segment I always call the Tempranillo Belt, the Frenchianization of Spain. So let's go back to a time and a place which isn't Spain, actually. The middle of the 1800s, and we're in France, specifically southern France. And as we were talking about when we talked about Catalonia, as we've talked about in this segment before, there's only two convenient ways from France down into Spain, and that is along either coast, which is why Catalonia was so subject to frequent invasions. But in the Basque country on the other side, on the Atlantic, the Bay of Biscay, as they call it, it's a harder way to traverse, so less prone to serious army invasions and things like that. But it certainly is traversed and was traversed. And it was traversed by a lot of French people from the southern part of Bordeaux, obviously, Gascony. When the famed phylloxera louse came calling, all these vineyards started dying there first, and then a lot of French winemakers, as well as all other tradesmen, etc., moved south in trying to find a stable economy. I mean, when wine is such a big part of your economy and it goes away, you've got to sort of shift and pivot, right? So a lot of winemakers went down into the region just sort of south of that pass in the Basque region. A lot of them, brought the skill of blending grapes and barrel aging grapes. This was not really a common thing. Now, of course, you know, if we've talked a lot about sort of the origins of wine and how it was, you know, made in stone troughs and then later amphora. And the concept there was, you know, temperature stabilization, things like that. But it was really the idea that once you had made the wine to a sufficient alcohol concentration, you could safely take it out of a super cold environment and put into a still a cool environment. You always want that sort of cave-like experience, so, you know, 55 degrees or cooler. But you could start to put things in barrel and expose these things to oxygen in a fairly controlled way, which made the wine develop, right? And it made it go into the secondary fermentation give, you know, wine that sort of richness and creaminess. And then also the idea of blending, right? It's not just because, as we've talked about as well, and we'll continue to talk about hitting a bunch of different regions, the theory in planting vineyards back in the day was very much plant a bunch of stuff and see what grows, because we don't really know what the climate conditions are going to be like, but we, you know, we're going to plant a bunch of varieties. So there's a bunch of old vineyards, if you can still find them, that are these essentially field blend vineyards. In fact, for anybody who's shopped or been part of the wine club at Bangor Wine and Cheese, you've had this wonderful field blend from my friend Alix at Domaine de Clos Vallon. She acquired one of these old vineyards in this part in southern France, but they're all over, that just have a host of different varietals. And they would just kind of bottle them all together. So the idea of coming down and saying, okay, this variety, and this variety, and this variety, and we're going to start perhaps planting them separately, we're going to start blending them. And another thing that came out of that practicality was the idea that the Tempranillo grape was the one that was really kind of working the best in this area, again, sort of south of there, which starts in the Rioja Navarro region and winds its way west along the Duero River. And the reason the Tempranillo worked so well in this region is that Spain, and I'll remind you all in case you have heard it before, if you didn't know, now you know, Spain is one of the highest in elevation countries in all of Europe. It's actually second only to Switzerland in terms of consistently high elevation. It's a large sort of plateau in the middle. And hence, it's cooler than you think. In fact, when I was, you know, on a wine trip in that area in late February, early March, it was bitter cold. Snow still on the ground. I mean, they needed this grape that had an earlier ripening cycle. And that's what Tempranillo gave them. Tempranillo gave them this grape that, you know, could ripen fairly quickly, fairly easily. Unfortunately, what started happening, especially around the early 1900s, once they sort of figured out the phylloxera, you know, planting on North American rootstocks, and everybody kind of got their life back together, is that they started ripping out all these other varietals in favor of Tempranillo. So it got really overboard to the point where in the late 80s and 90s, I mean, you basically couldn't find any other of these many, many varietals. In fact, there was a treatise written in, I believe it was 1911, where they talked about the 82 varietals that were available in the Rioja region. That didn't last. It's not the case when I started in the wine business. However, there are people that are out there trying to find these lost varietals and starting to reintroduce them, which is really cool. But yeah, the Tempranillo belt basically runs, as I said, from that Navarra Rioja region west all the way to the city of Porto, right, where Port is from, where they call it the Douro River. But all along the Duero, you do see this wonderful Tempranillo. It's a grape to get to know, folks. If you don't already know it, it's gained a lot of familiarity and popularity, certainly in the last 10 years. But it's one of those that I'm like, why are more Americans not drinking this grape? Because it's fairly hearty, it's rich, it's wonderful, it can barrel age beautifully. However, young versions of it are pretty darn tasty as well. So do get to know it, go out and find it, either in a blended version, as I was saying, or in a monovarietal version. But it's well worth it, and they're still fairly affordable, even the really nice version. So that is the Tempra Neo Belt and the Frenchianization of Spain. And we'll see what we're going to cram in next week. Stay tuned. But in the meantime, everybody, wish me good graces that I don't make a huge fool of myself in about a half an hour trying to coach soccer. Appreciate it.
Confidence is high. You got him. It's all about
confidence is high.
Yeah, it's all about how you compose yourself. So
I got a whistle.
See, there you go. That's all you need.
That's it. That's all I need, right? I figure.
And
you're
taller than most of them.
Yeah,
yes,
most of them. Carrie, good luck, sir, in your new venture, and I will talk to you all next week.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, gents. Bye-bye.
That is Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the Bottle every Tuesday.